I'm Freddie, host of Unforgotten, a podcast series which dives into the 2009 unsolved murder of Matt Stewart. The following is a special question and answer episode, featuring a conversation recorded earlier this week between myself and Steve, moderator of the Unforgotten Forum. If you have any suggestions about topics or questions to be included in future special episodes, you can submit them on the forum, located at unforgotten.freeforums.net.
It's good to hear from you, Freddie. It's been a while. Everyone, remember, you can go to unforgotten.freeforums.net to include questions off of this episode or any future episodes, and we'll try to read them and go over them here. First one we've got, Scarcrow asks, is it just me or is it weird that someone just down the road with the windows down on what he said was a pretty calm night, that he or no one else heard the gunshots? It's just astonishing to me that there were multiple gunshots fired in a pretty packed subdivision and not a single soul heard a single shot.
To me, pretty astonishing that nobody heard any gunshots. As far as the guy down the road, the Northland neighbor, I think he had said that he was five or six houses down the street. I don't know if, you know, with the distance, it just adds kind of another layer to it. To me, the fact that the three-year-old slept through, as well as the next-door neighbors, I could call them Mr. Michigan, they didn't hear anything. That, to me, is the biggest red flag. Although I will say, as I've talked to experts about it, gunshots are really weird, and sound in general, and what people can sleep through. So to me, it's not impossible, but it is, I guess, kind of bizarre. What are your thoughts?
Well, there's only a couple of possibilities here. At some point, guns were fired, and I don't think silencers are commonplace enough that would be the most likely reason they weren't heard. For me, it's the three-year-old not hearing the shots that gives me the most problem, because that's in the house one room away. It seems like the kind of thing that would wake anyone. The only thing I can fall back on with that might be an alternate explanation is that she did hear the shots. They woke her up, and as someone that age might be prone to doing, she kicked in a defense mechanism that blocked out the memory. But whether that happened or not, there's certainly no way to know. All right, next we have Hank Wallace, who asks, in most recent episode, the postmark person says two pastors talked to the detective, but that neither would talk to Freddie. Has Freddie tried to talk to them in any way? If so, what have they said?
I have tried to talk to both of the pastors that postmark referenced. One of them did talk with me. The pastor that I talked to denied the claim that postmark made when he said that this pastor had been the one who heard this story directly from the detective. He said that, no, it was not me. However, it was very interesting that he said that he was aware of another pastor hearing it. He was aware of the story, and he was aware of the story being common knowledge in this group of pastors. He basically said, I know what you're talking about, but I was not the one that heard it. So it kind of further cast some mystery and, in my mind, a little bit of doubt on the validity of this story, or especially the validity of all of the specific things that are said. We really can't know what happened unless we speak with the people that were there, in this case, the detective. And I have spoken with that detective, and no, he will not talk with me. In a perfect world, I would sit down and he would agree to talk with me, but I think the reason why I included the postmark interview was not so much that he had said all of that, because of having later talked to people like Michelle and Lucy, who have no idea who this person is, but yet their stories match up in these weird, I think, significant kind of ways. But it's all unconfirmed.
All right, next we have Only Sherry, who asks, was anyone tested for gunshot residue? Perhaps we ask Lucy.
I don't know. I think that we probably should ask Lucy. I think that Lucy probably would have told me if she had known that specifically. And in fact, I'm pretty sure Lucy has joined the forum, which is pretty cool, because now we have at least two people that have been interviewed on the podcast that are characters in this saga that have personally joined the forum.
Yeah, just getting people together who've had direct connections to this whole experience and letting them answer questions directly makes a huge difference in the validity of some of the theories that are out there. All right, Nicole Ashley, 1754, asks, if Brenda's car was already parked at the house, no one heard gunshots, screaming, or anything while Matt was brutally murdered, including the guy in the latest episode with his windows open, isn't it possible that Matt was murdered at a secondary location and it was staged to look like he was murdered at home? It could explain why the three-year-old stayed asleep, for in fact nothing occurred in the house at all. It explains why police found no trace of the killer or killer's escape route.
So that's definitely a thought that I've had. I don't feel that way today for multiple reasons. One, I think will become apparent in Lucy's testimony in the coming episode. And also just having spoken with some of the people that were involved in the investigation, I think that there was plenty of evidence to suggest that a crime occurred in the bedroom and in the house on Shepherd Hill Drive. There's enough outlandish things going on here already that, yeah, I just can't believe that could have been faked.
I don't think it would have made any sense to fake it. Why would it be better for him to have been killed in his bedroom over any other place if he was killed? And the logistics involved in moving him and smearing blood all over the place, it's just not realistic that that would have been important enough to the overall crime for them to go to that length to do so.
But I will say to whoever posted that, you're not alone in having that cross your mind. I've tried to wrestle with that possibility, but ultimately, I personally believe there's, like Steve said, no way.
Okay, Blue asks, I'm aware of some new evidence that was turned over to the SBI since you started this podcast. Are you planning to discuss that in either of the planned episodes in the coming months?
Well, first, I would say, and I think I responded on the forum, I'd be careful with the word evidence. If this person is referring to what I believe they're referring to, we don't know if what was turned over is evidence in the case, but I'm aware of a development that happened a couple months ago where someone came forward with potential evidence and they reached out to me. I talked with this person. We both felt like we needed to get the authorities involved as soon as possible. And what is the subject of this was handed over to the Mooresville Police Department. And we'll be exploring this in the coming episode. It will be interesting to see the results of the tests that I hope at this point have been done.
And we're not talking about some small incidental thing, right? We're talking about potentially game-changing revelations if this evidence is as important as it could be.
Yes. I mean, in my completely unprofessional opinion, yes. Just as a layperson, I would say, yeah, this is probably something that you would need if you were going to make an arrest.
Moving on, Seva Seva asks, I was going to wait until the podcast was complete before asking questions and sharing research, but I could not pass this up. I know for certain the house was not in foreclosure, confirmed by realtor friend. However, the home was up for sale in 2008 and then withdrawn from the research I have done. Why? No matter what people think or heard or suspect, the fact remains motive is critical.
Well, I would agree with all of it. I would say that, yeah, the house that the Stewarts were living in was up for sale in 2008 and was quickly taken off the market about a month or so after it was put on the market. I don't know for certain the reason that it was up for sale in the first place or why it was taken off the market. I will be sharing a portion of my interview with Lucy where I ask her that question if she knew. But ultimately, I'll say, I don't know. It's a mystery. There are rumors that have swirled around about the house having gone back on the market in 2009 at the time of Matt's murder. And if anybody has any evidence of that, that would be phenomenal if they could send that forward. I've done a lot of research to try to confirm those rumors, and I can tell you that as of now, I have found nothing.
Batman on the forums asks, has there been any interest from any large media podcast investigation type team recently? Lucy is obviously incredibly close to the source material for this investigation. Has she mentioned the family feeling the heat because of this podcast? It's a two-parter, so you should probably take it first and second.
Yeah. To answer the first question, I would say as far as media is concerned, before the podcast came out, for about 6 months to a year, I was trying really hard to get a podcast or news outlet or investigative journalist to cover the Matt Stewart case. And ever since I started the podcast, I haven't stopped doing that. Whether it's the results of the podcast or my just badgering these people, I have spoken with Nancy Grace's producer and some other people about reporting on Matt's murder and getting some more attention around the story. So fingers crossed for that. I'm going to keep pushing. And I would encourage everyone that's listening to personally keep pushing. It will take a group effort. And I know that it has. It's not just been me reaching out to people. And it means something now that I reach out and say, I have a podcast that has been downloaded almost 400,000 times rather than before, where it was, will you please cover this murder that hasn't been talked about in 10 years? So I feel like we're getting somewhere in part because so many people are now paying attention to it. But yeah, there's some movement to answer that one question. Moving on to the second question, I think we'll be discussed more in the next episode, Lucy's relationship with the family, kind of what happened in the aftermath of Matt's murder, and I will let her tell that story. So stay tuned for that.
Research Hound asks, here's another thing that bothers me. I definitely like input. I can't remember what episode it was, but there was a statement that Angel heard the last shot that killed her husband when she was out of the house about to cross the street. I might be overthinking it, but how would she know that her husband didn't grab the gun and shoot the assailant? He was fighting the attacker when she ran out, so that's all she would have known, and she would have been focused on calling for help. She hears another shot, supposedly the last shot, and that's the only report thus far of anyone hearing any shots, right? That's weird. So she didn't sit there and hope that maybe her husband just shot the attacker and everyone is saved? I don't know, random thought. What if the shot was to kill her child? She supposedly didn't know. It's too much to be believable.
It is weird. I think that last observation too, she didn't know. So to back up a little bit, that's that statement about Angel having heard the last gunshot as she ran out of the house was not in any of the podcast episodes. It was a clip from an interview that I did with Hannah, Matt's oldest daughter, right before the first episode was released. And to date, I have not released that interview or included it in any of the episodes. That was one of the more interesting parts of that interview. But one of the things that she brought up when I asked about her mom having left her younger sister, Hannah's younger sister, the three-year-old daughter inside the house, she explained, you know, she really felt like she didn't have time in that moment to have been able to get the one-year-old son and the three-year-old daughter out. But she explained that as she was, her mom was running across the street, she could hear what she, I guess, knew was the last gunshot. It was almost said as to explain why she didn't go back for the three-year-old. And at that point, I didn't know that nobody had heard gunshots. So in hindsight, looking back, I think it's an important observation. Out of all the people that I've talked to that were in this direct vicinity, whether it's Mr. Michigan, the Lawsons across the street, Toylene Franco next door in the other direction, none of them heard any gunshots. The only person that I've ever heard hearing a gunshot was Angel. According to her oldest daughter, she told her she heard the last gunshot as she was crossing the street. And how would she have known that it wasn't Matt getting the gun, or how she would have known that it wasn't the attacker going into the next room? I don't know. It's a good point. It's a good question. I don't know.
Amelia on Facebook asks, since there is so much corruption in the Mooresville Police Department, can the case not be turned over to a different department?
Amen. I agree completely with the premise of this question. That's my question too. I hope that the Mooresville Police Department, the State Bureau of Investigators, the North Carolina Attorney General, and Governor Roy Cooper can answer that question for me. With so much corruption in the Mooresville Police Department in 10 years without answers or even an update on this case, can the case not be turned over to a different department? That's my question too.
All right. And everyone, don't forget, you have unforgotten.freeforums.net to get other information about the case and to talk to other people interested in the details and questions that we've brought up here tonight. What about Facebook, Freddie? How do people find you on Facebook?
Facebook.com/unforgottenpodcast.
All right. Until next time.
Unforgotten is a Bold Era production, written and recorded by myself, Freddie Wilson, in the always sunny Daytona Beach, Florida. As always, this series is dedicated to the life of Matt Stewart. May his memory remain unforgotten.